what I'm going to speak about today is the two styles of dance that I know several styles of dance, but two of the styles of dance, one is called Odissi and one is called Bharatanatyam. Now, originally, each of the dance styles could trace their regional affiliation to various areas in India. But now, of course, it's done all over. It's not restricted to one particular area. So you can do Bharatanatyam in any place all over India. They do it in London. These people here are our dancers here. So it's not restricted to... But what is interesting and what really attracted me to this particular project is that the origins of the dance are very different. So what you actually see now, we see women, and now men also do the styles. Or we saw men, and then we see women doing it. So may I have a piece of Kleenex? Yes, I'm going to skip it out. So the dance that Tony just thought it would be a good idea to have a little introduction. So this is Tilana, and it's done in front of a temple. You can turn it out.
Not much, I think.
And you'll notice it's much slower than a lot of the dances that are done now. And this is because this particular woman that I studied with, she was a former temple dancer, a Devi Dasi. This is the Sarangapani temple in South India, in Kumbakonam. Can't even hear the music. Anyway.
Well, I was trying not to drown your ears.
So what happens when you're dancing? Takti step, takti step, didite. So those rhythmic things are going through my head because it's very tied up to the rhythm. And so when it's being taught, the teacher will utter these different dip-day-tom, 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 tay ta dip ta ta ta. Tay did a tay, tay did a tay, tay did a tay, dip ta. Tay did a tay, tay did a tay, tay did a tay, dip ta. Tay did a tay, tay did a tay, tay did a tay, tay. So it's very, very tied into the rhythm. So those syllables that I'm speaking, that would be how it would be taught. The teacher would be actually sitting on the floor and beating a stick. So each actual dance has a each actual movement is tied up with these different syllables. Tay yun da 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 da. Then the other style of dance I'm going to tell you about is Odissi. And this is the Konark temple. Now, unfortunately, we couldn't find any of me actually in the costume. So we just wanted you to see the shapes. Kurtaka da, day, day. And that's a different Kurtaka da, day. One, two, three. Kurtaka da, day, day. Kurtaka da, day. One, two, three. And what you're looking at, you see the shape? My feet are further apart, and the feet are both together. And it's very, very square. This is the Konark temple that's actually behind me. Te, 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 ta. Ta, janam, ta, ta, ta. These movements are very different for those people that know about Odissi and Bharatanatyam, in the fact that with Odissi, the feet are this distance apart, and when you do a Bharatanatyam, the heels are very, very close. And you see how I'm running on my heels? You could actually get a little stuck underneath. Stuff underneath it, huh?
Oh.
And on the reason why I showed this is also because on the walls of the temple, all these sculptures. Now this is a movement you absolutely would not do in Bharatanatyam. These two know Bharatanatyam. That's why I'm pointing it up. Nor would you do that movement either. It's very rounded, and it's in many ways it's almost more not as structured. And so all these poses that you can see behind me, these are poses then that are mimicked in the dance, because Odissi was actually rediscovered and reinvented in the 1960s, and that is when I started to do it. How it was done then originally by, as an entertainment, by young boys, and they went around and they would perform for zamindars, as part of, and that was how. And then when the Uriya people decided that they really wanted, see that choke style? You'd never see that in Bartland. See how deep it is? That people would know then that is actually Odissi. So you're beginning to realize that there, of course, there are many styles of dance in India. You might as well turn the light on, I guess. And it's still not working. You can just play with it and see if you can get it. You don't think it's going to work? Okay. Oh dear. Anyway, so we have these we have these two styles of dance, Bharatanatyam and Odissi. Bharatanatyam was part of a very important tradition in which it was a specific caste that did the dance, the Ishe Valala caste. The women did the dance, but the women that weren't good looking would get married and would have a husband from the same community. Those then they would have children. However, if the woman was beautiful, showed a particular talent in doing dance, she then would be trained as a dancer. She was not allowed to get married. She didn't marry, but she was allowed to take a patron. So she would have a patron, she would have children by this patron, and the patron was very well selected, because naturally you want to marry someone who's wealthy, don't you? Because you've got to have your jewelry. So essentially these people were courtesans. Now they often shared, they would be a courtesan, but they would also perform in the temple as part of the temple worship. And they had a salary in which was provided by the temple, just as the priests were given. They were also given land, so that their house then was, they would have their house, and that was provided for. And their children, so we have then Devadasi, she had to, her mother then made sure that she would marry a wealthy man, and a man who was fair-skinned, because they're looking for the, and a high-caste man. She would then become his second wife, shall we say. All the children belonged to her. So any decisions then that were to be made were, so she was a very liberated woman, because in those days, even the women couldn't even read and write. They weren't allowed to do that. So when I started doing my studies in the 60s, there still were these ladies around, Devadasis, and that dance that I studied at the very beginning, this lady called Sarna Saraswati, she actually had been a Devadasi. Yes. Oh, yeah, it's working. Oh, it's working. We have liftoff. Oh, Tony.
Well,
so
it's just...
Just get rid of the thing underneath.
It's a movie. So I'll try and start
doing
and stop it.
Okay. I'll just... So we'll start. Okay, we turn off the lights. Isn't that good? May I have a little glass of water? Would that be okay?
Yeah,
thank you. So, as I mentioned, then the dance then was part of the temple ritual, but it also had a very important... In those days, of course, there was no line between the religious and the secular. So then, we can see then that often the carvings relate to the dance. However, when I was first studying the dance, it really... this is a very new thing that they've gone back to the temples, because the shape of Bharatanatyam was very upright, and you can see how the hips are allowed to go out, and then the different, this is like showing an elephant. You can see the elephant like this right here. So we have some changes then in the choreography and in also the history of the dance. So I have studied with a couple of temple dancers, and their lives were actually quite, in some ways, quite difficult, because of course they always suffered the opprobrium of being low caste. So even though they were the very best dancer, it just, caste always played a role in that. And so when, during the time of, British independence, a lot of the, in particular, this one woman, Rukmini Devi, she then decided she would study the dance. So now we have high caste people studying the dance. Now somehow, when a high caste person does that dance, it's a clean dance and it's a better dance. And I've had people say, well, you know, she is a Devadasi, so therefore the dance will not be, it'll be somehow polluted, somehow really erotic and just not, and shouldn't be done. So I just thought that I would show you again what a Gopuram looks like, that was the last one. And a lot of the postures and the stories that we do in the dance are actually related on the Gopuram. So now I also want to show you how absolutely sensuous the women were, because dance, of course, is all over India. I'm speaking about two styles, and there are many different styles of dance. However, if we look at the temples, you'll find that Bharatanatyam and Odissi have the best, have the closest sort of relationship to sculptures, because the shapes that they actually assume, you actually assume in the dance. And so this is, again, this is a, so they're found in Jain temples, in Buddhist monasteries, and in Hindu, naturally in Hindu temples as well. So next slide. So I just wanted you to get some idea of the profusion. This is in North India and Rajasthan, where the dance then wasn't actually that particular style of dance that I'm speaking about. It was done in Eastern India and in Southern India. So as you can see here, each dance tradition has its own history. I'm speaking about two dance styles. One is called Bharatanatyam, and the other style is called Odissi. So the regional variation, the sculptural poses, we often see then that when people are choreographing, what do? You rush the temple, you grab an image. I mean, this is how innovation is done. You go to the temple and you see the different way it's done. So as part of temple ritual and court and secular life, because in traditional India, it's very difficult to differentiate between the religious and the secular. So when I was speaking about these women then that were a part of the Devadasi tradition, the tradition of being like a courtesan, but those same women also were very much in the integral part of the life of temple ritual as well. So the Hindu mythology is often danced in the actual in the repertoire. So one of the ways that I found when I was in India, the best way to learn about Hinduism was to actually be in the in learning the dance, because this is how you learn the different stories. So we have two images here. On the left hand side, you can see that this is a Nataraja from Orissa, and the Orissa is south of Calcutta. And you can see how the hip deflects out. And then you can see on the right-hand side, we can also see a sculpture, and this is from the Chidambaram Temple, which is in South India, and how close they are. Now, what is interesting is, on the right-hand side in Odissi, the dance style as we see it today really doesn't want you to put the hip out. So you can see there was some sort of exchange way on, and then the one on the right-hand side said, no, keep that hip in. But the one on the left-hand side says, yes, let's see hips, so let's go on to the next.
Yeah, it won't change instantly because it's a movie.
So one of the things that really interested me when I did my research here were the different stories of Shiva. And those stories of Shiva then are also danced in Bharatanatyam. And those different implements that the god has, that the Lord Shiva has, such as a snake, and you know, everyone, you know, you do the snake with your hands like this, and then you've got the katranga with the skull, and these different poses, then we do all of those same poses in the dance. Next. And the other aspect that I really enjoyed with the dance and still enjoy is the fact that you can, the different stories relate, you just learn about the mythology. Everyone has seen this image. This is Shiva as Nataraja. So when this pose is assumed, this really stands for India. I think we can assume that. But this particular posture of Shiva as Nataraja varies regionally. So each area in India has like a different representation of how it actually should be done. Now, what I found very interesting when I was studying the dance, this is how it was mainly, how most dance recitals start. The Devadasis never did this, the traditional people. They would never have a Nataraja on the stage. They would say, if you're going to do worship, you go to the temple. This is a stage performance, and we don't have that. And certainly, I saw it in the 60s getting bigger and bigger, and now this is just, everyone assumes this is the tradition. So it's fun to note that it is not the tradition at all, but and you can see how it will now vary. We get to Odissi, and they have brought on Lord Jagannath, and he is the deity that's worshipped in the area of Orissa. So you can see the dancer, she's come, she's offering flowers, and Lord Jagannath then is decorated. And that started even just a little bit later than the Nataraja image, of course, because Odissi had yet to be invented. This style of dance, Odissi, was originally done by young boys and not by girls. On to the next. It was part of a theatrical tradition, and these groups went around and performed in wealthy landlords' homes. It's very much tied up with the Ras Lila tradition, which is in Mathura. Now, I have tried to explain that, first of all, of course, this would be these are all traditional people, and you can see that the dance master is a male. Here he is. You will not see any male dancers. That is just not happening until now. And we have two men, so those would be either musicians. So perhaps, let's just say if this lady was the Devadasi, the woman who embodies the music, and these were all her children. The boys would become musicians or dance teachers, and the girls would become dancers, but they would not teach the dance, they would only be dancers, and if they studied the dance, they would not be allowed to get married. So that was, I always wondered why my dance master never taught his daughters. And he used to say, "Master, just why don't you teach them? It's such a nice thing." "Oh no," he said, "I'm not teaching my girls dancing." And it was only later that I discovered that if they had anything to do with dance, it would ruin their marriage prospect. That is then. And then gradually, when we got into the 70s, a few of us convinced a couple of these ladies to actually start dancing and teaching dance. And so we have these traditional people also now, of course, now teaching the dance. And so we have then different names in South India. They call them Devadasis, and in North and in the Odissi style of dance, in which really comes only from young boys, as in Elizabethan England dancing. But in the temple, there were also these women called Maharis. Now, what is very interesting about Maharis is that whenever I was going there early in the 70s and 60s, the Maharis did not know dance. They really didn't know dance or anything about it. But suddenly we have that they did know something about dance. So a whole area is being recreated. But both these women did not marry. It was the same idea. You were married to God. So once you're married to God, then, of course, you can't become a widow. And no one wanted to become a widow, because once you're a widow, then you can't have proper meals, and you're kept out, and it's just a terrible thing. So in some ways it was very good. But they had both religious and secular functions. The religious function within the Puri temple is really very, the Jagannath temple in Puri is very vague. Because they didn't, first of all, you can't really read accounts by early people of what they saw. There's the occasional, and certainly in any of the people that I met, really were sort of more there as in function just to be there because they were auspicious. But we have then, within Odissi dance, which is from Orissa, we now have the temple tradition coming alive. And it didn't exist, but you can see, like, they say, "Oh no, the Maharis were doing the dance, and it was really a temple tradition." The style of dance, Odissi, from Orissa, was created by men who had danced as young boys as part of an entertainment tradition, really. They just went around and they danced the Krishna stories. However, in both cases, whenever you were attached to a temple, you did not marry, and you were auspicious. Now we have then, when did Bharatanatyam, the South Indian style, where do we trace its history? So it's really around the time of Sarfoji, that period of time. There were four musicians that were very talented, and they were given patronage. And what's really interesting is that the best repertoire that we have still comes from them. And this is called the Tanjore Quartet. And musically, it's just stronger. And so in that way, we have then a very strong tradition, a musical tradition for Bharatanatyam. Whereas in Odissi, the whole repertoire was created in 1960. Now, here we just have more about the Marathas. These were the, this was actually in their old ancestral home. But what I found interesting is they didn't worship Nataraja, but we have that picture, that old picture of them doing it. So you sort of say, well, maybe they really were. So now, these are the living examples of it now, but the living examples of the Tanjore Quartet. In other words, these were all either related by blood or by marriage. So, for example, if a dance teacher the dance teacher, he would have sisters. The sisters that were going to be dancers would not marry, but other sisters could marry into the community and have children. But so you can see is they are definitely not going to have a lot of women in that community, are there? Some of the ladies are now going to become like courtesans. Anyway, so here we have the court of Tanjore, and I just thought that you'd just like to see how the depiction of it's a company painting, and the different instruments. If you look on your left, you're going to see a flute. Then the other instrument is what is called a tutti, and it's like a bagpipe, which is rather interesting. And if you'll read during at this court of Sarkoji, he definitely encouraged Western musicians. The violin was introduced. And he also had some foreign ladies doing dancing, too. So it was a very liberated court at that time. And you can see that much of the costume, actually, of the dancer now is the same. You can see the sari. Mm-hmm. And then, a few changes. But you can also see how they're dressed. They're dressed like as in the Maratha court. Now we have the palace in Tanjore. And what is so interesting, we have the Raja being taken in procession. And if you look on your right, these are dressed like North Indian dancers. So the whole palace was very open. It had Western dance. Apparently they even did Western dancing. And then of course we have the North Indian tradition, which was like Kathak with a tabla. And that would be because the Marathis were sort of in the middle, not really in North India and South India. And when they were ruling in Tanjore, they brought their art there as well. And much of the repertoire is, has been passed on. So here we have then who is called a Natuvanar on the right-hand side. And you can see he's holding on to little symbols. He beats those symbols and speaks the different syllables. So it's ta-rita-rita-kina. The Natuvanars, these Natuvanars, if they are hereditary, they have the goods. Because all they've done, they were born. They sat by their father, they beat the things, they knew exactly what they were going to do then as far as teaching the dance. And a Tuvanar never stands up and shows you the dance. He sits there and beats a stick. So the thing that's most important is the rhythm. Occasionally they will stand up, but very rarely. They will also teach you the expression, which is called Abhinaya. Abhinaya then is is the movement of the face, the eyes, the hands, in which you actually learn about how to do this. However, the content of the Abhinaya is very erotic because, of course, it is your supreme love for God in an erotic way. So here we have then the dancers that are hereditary. Because they were so involved in this repertoire, they were really considered somewhat naughty. So I can remember people saying, oh dear, these people are they're just erotic, that's all. You can't look at that dance. Whereas if a high caste person does it, it's not erotic. It has nothing to do with how they've done it. It has to do with your being, if you're high caste or low caste. Exactly, because I've heard it so many times. So here we have the god being taken in procession, which is wonderful to see in South India. And the dancers on the right-hand side are removing the evil eye. And you can see them with their hands up there. So what they're doing is that they're removing the evil eye or anything, and the dancers embody auspiciousness. So whenever you would perhaps buy some land or you just wanted to have everything put in good order, you would have a dancer come. So the god has been taken out and you want all evil to be removed. It is an aspect of the god Vishnu that's worshipped because you can see the sort of the V type on their chest. So then we return now to the temple, and we can see that the carvings, all of these carvings, and when I originally went to South India, I was fortunate because I went to Chidambaram, and I thought, this is so interesting. So this has also got me interested in the dance. This is another a very interesting Konari Rajapuram in Tamil Nadu. And you can see it's still during the British time, so there are a few soldiers that are sort of hidden in the back there. You can see the temple dancer, and what's fun is to look at the jewelry, and you'll see it's very much the same as the jewelry that we still wear today. So she then is dancing in the temple. You can see again they're wearing, I remember my dance master, he always wore the turban. Now, because of the classical music, it's within Bharatanatyam. In other words, classical music, Bharatanatyam, the dancers, professionally trained musicians, they were this huge cast of people that really knew a lot about the music. However, there were also Brahmin men who then had liaisons with the dancers, and they then would teach them. So there was a wonderful cross-fertilization between the Brahmin men and the Devadasi. So now you're going to produce people that are really good in music, aren't you? Because you've got the two things happening. The dance teachers, who were the hereditary dance teachers, they then could father dancers, so that some of their daughters, if they were good-looking, could be dancers, but if they weren't good-looking, they would just get married to other members of the cast. And or they'd learn singing, or something like that. But even if they learned singing, if they were going to be a professional, you still can't get married because you are a woman that's outside of the community, of staying at home. Okay. So all of these people then were very important, and there are a few people still alive, but there aren't so many around. Now, dancers were auspicious. And so if we actually were having they would perform what's called the waving of the pot leg, and they would just put the pot in front of you. Often people do that just before you go out to make sure that the evil eye is just not on you. So anything to do with these dancers is they were auspicious. However, they also were sort of pushed in the corner because they were women that weren't allowed to get married. And I just thought you'd like to see the costume. It's very much the same as this is the costume that's worn today. And the introduction of the violin, which was during the time of Serfoji, the late 1700s. And he had a whole Western orchestra there as well. So in many ways, things have gone backwards, really, because the Western music is not as popular. Now, one of the things that you would do, any of you ladies, auspiciously married ladies, is you would offer betel. The offering of betel nut is a very important aspect in any kind of relationship. So if you were a courtesan, you would offer betel to your patron. And you can see the wearing of these nose rings. Now, the wearing of the nose ring, but particularly there's one that goes like right between these, right in here. Everyone's seeing me? It's called a bullet. Only Devadasis wore the bullet. Nobody wore one, but now, of course, you can see lots of them wearing it. You wear this practically the same jewelry. You order your jewelry in the special jewelry shop right by the temple in Chennai, and you go. So not too much has changed. However, let's look at the stomach. The stomach was bare. Now, not anymore. Here we have, you can just see this. But you can see how the jewelry is very much the same. And in the olden days, often the stomach was shown. When I'm talking about olden days, I'm talking about up to 1980. Then suddenly, I think just everybody got fat, so they just decided to cover up. I don't think it had anything to do with that. And then you wear jasmine flowers. Oh dear, this is. So now the it's okay. The as I mentioned, that the expression, the Abhinaya, was very erotic. So the male teacher would be talking about things like sexual intercourse and all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, that was in the hand gestures. So suddenly it was felt that young girls, high caste girls, couldn't learn that kind of eroticism from low caste men. So they went around, and I actually was her first student, a lady called Kalana Dina Ryan. And she had, and there's always someone who's different than everybody else. So she, even during all this time of the dance not being done by everybody, she was from a high caste family, and she studied dance. However, her family got her married. She was quite young when she got married. And then in about 1972, they thought, we can't have these high caste girls learning this rude vocabulary from Natuvanars. So they found this woman and they asked her to remember what you did, because you now are going to have to teach these girls. Only girls should be learning erotic stuff from another woman. And she's married and she's high caste, so the whole thing was perfect. However, they had to convince her husband to let her do it. Anyway, so we started off, studying at her house. Tony would come along. And so now the whole Abhinaya, the whole expression, then is out of the hands of men really teaching it. So that, and we also have a lady doing Bharatanatyam who's called in to teach other styles of dance like Odissi, because she is a respectable married lady. So what you realize, it's your person what you embody. And these are, again, these the different images and how a dancer does it and the... Now, have any of you ladies done your Gajay Puja? Yeah, okay. So the Gajay Puja was originally, you can see we brought in the priest, and this is with my old dance master. He's not in the picture. And then we have these two ladies. The Gajay Puja then is, there's a certain repertoire, and you master the first number of dances, and then they do what's called the Gajay Puja, which means that you get your ankle bells, and they're blessed. Now, when I was doing my Bharatanatyam, no such thing existed. There was not a Gajay Puja. However, Gajay Puja is in the history of Bharatanatyam. And so they were presented their first ankle bells, and then they did what is called an Arangetram, which is your first full performance. Now, the first full performance is definitely, and you were mentioning how much yours cost, and we're talking thousands of pounds. I mean, you've got to rent the orchestra and often feed the people. But the Arangetram, within the traditional setup with the hereditary dancers, was when the unmarried woman who had a Brahmin patron presented her daughters in the village or her city, wherever it was, and all of the other wealthy men came to look at this and to admire, and also the knowledgeable people, because people wanted to know, is she going to be a great dancer? And then at the end of the performance, some man would come and make an offer to the woman, and they then would have sexual rights on that woman. So she then, they would set up a separate household. She owned all the children and things like that. And he could leave sort of at any time. But it was very important, of course, for the mother to get the daughter married well, because you want to live well, don't you? I mean, mm-hmm. And so they would pick someone. So caste counted. And often the men were very fair. So you're going to see within this community is that the fairer people, or the dancers, but then their brothers and sisters who stayed along this line work. I just found that so interesting. And so when Bharatanatyam left being done by traditional people, the high caste people said, we can't have an Arangetram. It's horrible, because what it's meaning is that we're showing our daughters and men are coming and ogling them and they're going to become prostitutes. So we can't have that. So then nobody had And then gradually it started working its way into the system again. And of course it's very good for the teachers and musicians, because you have to make a big present at that time, because it symbolizes the culmination of all your studies. And as I said, around in the 60s, the men were the teachers and the women were the dancers. There were a few women teaching, not so many. Several of them from the hereditary community were teaching, but basically it was only the hereditary people were men. But we have in the 40s a high caste woman, you've probably all heard of her, called Rukmini Devi. Mm-hmm. She then tied in her studies of, she just decided that she would do Bharatanatyam as a way of sort of expressing being an Indian. She was married to a Britisher, and when I met her, she said, the worst thing I did was to marry a Britisher. It was much worse than even studying Bharatanatyam. But the whole Brahmin community was absolutely upset that a Brahmin woman would come and perform in public. So we have her presenting, and she founded the most famous dance school called Kalakshetra. We have her performing. But then, she is beholden to these low caste men to do the teaching. So, and it was always considered that the teachers were greedy, because you'd have a performance and then they'd up the price and you'd send out all the tickets and everyone would get. So she said, right, that's it. I'm teaching women. So she got a whole bunch of high caste women, and they just sat down and they figured it all out together, and they then took over the dance from the men. And so now we have we have women then that can teach, they can sing, they can do everything, because they just got fed up of actually being beholden to it. So then we have then at the same time sometimes men and women dancing together. It's called the double dance. So they would dance together, and very often they would be husband and wife dancing. But now what we have, which is very interesting, is that we have men now performing the repertoire of the Kepal dancers, the Devadasis. And these are, there are many, so Sikhs. I can remember when my, and then we have Muslims. We have a Muslim who's actually doing the temple ritual in one of the smaller temples in Madras. So anybody can do it. We have transgendered people doing it. We have everybody doing Bharatanatyam. But I just thought it'd be interesting to see to see the actual history. And people are going back to the temples for ideas of stories, for ideas of... So here we have a man and a woman, and they did a duo. And I can remember, like, they were crawling all over each other. I couldn't believe it. Like, really doing very suggestive sexual things together. Where, of course, you know, we never did that before. And this is, like, at the Madras Music Academy, the most sort of, Brahmin community and conservative community. So it is definitely very, it's very open now, so who can do it? On to the next, okay. The dance really hasn't changed much. Now, we have then, in the state of Orissa, Odissi. Now that is a style of dance that you'd probably even think look the same, but it's really not. I mean, and it was created in the 1950s. So what happened there, and all through this whole theme, you're going to see people who were just very educated and was all part of the, the leaving of the British, and they wanted to assert their Indianness. So we have these families. They weren't so wealthy, but maybe they owned a bit of land. And they wanted to say, we want to have a style of dance that's just done from Orissa. So how do we do this? And it was so clever. What they did is that they sent several people to Kalakshetra, that school founded by the high caste woman who was getting everything done properly. She sent a couple of them down there. But they looked at this, it's called a Gotapura style of dance, these young boys who did the Krishna dances. So we have the little boys doing the dance. Now these were very low caste, poor kids. And so mainly what they would often do is just be attached to some troupe and just get fed or something like that. So all the important dance, Odissi dance masters, such as Kelucharan and Mayadhar, they all started off as that. And what makes them interesting is they were dancers. So when you perform Odissi, they put on your makeup, they put on your sari, because they have been dancers. Whereas in Bharatanatyam, you don't, the dance master doesn't touch you. That's it. You know, you get the makeup man or whatever it is. So this tradition I'm talking about, the Gotipura tradition, they were young boys, and it really wasn't caste-based. It was mainly, they were low caste, and they were just poor, and women were not involved at all. Then we have these, and this is a Kelucharan, one of the men, and you can see it's much more languid, and you can see how the poses rise in Bharatanatyam, it's much more straight up and down, and on the right-hand side he's showing makeup, so he was what's called a Gotipura, as part of this troupe, and all of these different dance teachers were part of the troupe, and then they got together, and they actually sat down, and they met, and they said, we are going to create a dance, we're going to think of what did we do as little boys. So naturally, it was sort of taught systematically, and they had various rhythms. And so they would then, they sat down, and they created the dance. And it was recognized as a dance style. So there's me on the right, and my master on the left. So you can see we stand in choke, you can see? Now look at that middle. It's slightly there. And now you have to cover it up. There was a big, and sometimes, it's a group from Singapore, and they actually appear with bare middles. Yes. And that caused a really, really controversial thing about this. So, and this is the other posture. You can see the little sort of pith things that we wear in our hair. And so it's the imitating of the different postures. This is called Tribhanga, the three bends. And then the silver jewelry indicates it's Odissi. They just have it with silver. Silver is because one of the founders of Odissi owned a silver store in Cuttack. And that's why they all wear silver jewelry, which I find very interesting. It has nothing to do with antiquity. And here we have again, so you're usually looking in the mirror, and Kelucharan, he is like the maker, really, of Odissi. And of course, when we were studying, there were like three of us in a class, or one, and now you go and there's like 500, and special price for foreign ladies, you have to pay even more. All right, here we are at the Konark Temple, which is in Orissa. And you can see then how voluptuous they are. You can see the nice little waist. And so how the costume was created, what do? You go to the temple and you look at how it's created and you get some ideas. But this style of dance was not done in the temples. It was done by little boys. It was created in the 1960s and with the help of one lady who actually fully trained in Bharatanatyam, the other style, went to down to Kalakshetra, came back and said what she did. So this is me at the Qutub Minar in Delhi. The Qutub Minar is it was originally a Hindu temple, but now the kids were throwing stones at me. Anyway, there you go. It's now a mosque, and so I was lucky in those days to be able to take, I don't know if you want to take this picture. What has happened now is that the dance has become overtly religious. So we have this dancer, and as you can see, you dye your hand so that you can really see the hand signs. Again, the silver jewelry, because Babalal Joshi, one of the founders, he has a jewelry store. And but there's a lot of prostrating in front of God. None of the Devadasis or anything did that. They said, this is on the stage, this is entertainment. Then there's the dance in the temple, but this has nothing to do with religion. It is entertainment. And what I found, in my book, if you want to look at it, Shiva and Dance with an Iconography, you'll see that what inspired me was the relationship between the sculptures and the actual postures in the dance. Now, if you look carefully at these hands, and those of you who know the Shiva, the Nataraja has the hand underneath, but in Odissi, they went around, they looked at the sculptures that were unique to that area, and they just made them imitate the sculpture. So as it's being created, I went around with my master in the temple and we said, yeah, those are good, let's put that in there, why not? And so this is how Odissi was created. It's not an old style, but it's a wonderful style. and you can just see that the Nataraja from Orissa has many more hands. So there are group dances now, and in fact, I read that there were 500 people dancing in Bhubaneswar at one time. So it's really no longer a solo style. And what's also interesting is, see that little thing in the side? This has come from Bharatanatyam. And then we have, he was a young dancer, and he's now one of the famous dance teachers. So I just took his picture. Just to see that beautifully open leg posture. And but he would wear something like that when he performed. Right. So the dance has been very much tied up with being part of the part of the tradition. Then we have this area that's very murky, and I think someone should do some research on it. When the Raja of Kurda was defeated, he would then move to Puri. And when he moved to Puri, he then was given first rights on these women that were working in the temple, doing some sort of ritual dance, but no one has actually said what it is. And I can remember going around and meeting these ladies in the 70s, and they could sing a few songs. They really couldn't do much, but now someone has sort of created this whole thing. And so he then, he was like he could then sleep with all these women. He had first rights on them, and but this did not happen the same in the south, which I found very interesting. And and there are many, many more southern temples, too, with dancers attached to them. And there's a long tradition of writing down what was actually going on. Whereas in Orissa, no one really wrote about it, so we don't really know what happened. And again, this is the one of the men that I studied with. And I thought, all of these men are the creator of, and unfortunately this slide faded, they're all striking the Tribhunga pose. So all of these men were dancers as young men, as young boys. And then they sat down, they said they wrote it in blood apparently, and they would meet every few weeks or so. They created this dance style. Then they got, which I find very interesting, some high caste young girls, to study it. And then they gradually kept going to Delhi and saying, look, we're from Orissa, we have a classical dance style. And then it became accepted as a classical dance style. The only one still alive is Mayadar Raut on the left, the others are all dead. But all of them lived in, they were trained then as young kids, 7 and 8, as these little dancers that went around and very much as in Elizabethan times and just performed the different Krishna stories. And okay. So we have here this one, Lady Kapilavatsyayan, who really has done a lot for the style, and then two, these teachers are now dead, but they were both, she's just correcting them. She's just telling them, I actually know more than you. But you can see that lovely little smile they have. Now, this is what a gotipura looks like. This is how these young men dressed up. So they looked like girls, but then they would go around and they would do all the Krishna stories. And it was wonderful because then you would learn the Krishna stories by and so some zamindar, some wealthy man would pay them. Then all the villagers would come in and then learn about the different stories of Krishna. Now there is a style of the Rasleela, which is done in Mathura, just south of Delhi. There's the Rasleela tradition, but it's not exactly the same as the Gotipura tradition. And then I just thought, that's it. Yes, we've had it, yeah. So this is then, we just thought we'd end with Nataraja, because Nataraja is depicted in different ways all over India. And this then is the Arisi Nataraja right here. And you can see by the different, he carries different elements, like the kapala, the skull, the half skull, and it's much more ornate. So we can turn on the lights and have questions, if anybody has any questions. Oh yes, go ahead. Yeah.
So if Odyssey was created so recently, how does it classify as a classical sort of platform?
Oh, when you apply. In other words, what they did is that they, they created, it's like anything classical. If you're going to do piano or something, you have to be able to play the scales right or whatever it is. So what they did is that they created all the dance steps and all the little sections of dance that you'd memorize this, and then they created a repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, there wasn't a two-hour show. It was like 7 minutes or something like that, you see. So then they kept making it longer and longer. And in the 60s and 70s, most people would do a half a show of Bharatanatyam and a half a show of Odissi. But you see, that means hiring two orchestras, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that got to be a bit expensive. So then they gradually expanded the Odissi repertoire so it lasts 2 hours. So then you could give a full Odissi over that. You did Odissi in Katak or something like that. And so, but musically, Odissi and Bharatanatyam, somehow you can put together something, you know, yeah. So this is how they created it. They established the steps, they established, because it was also, because these men were dancers as well, they did have the basic steps. And you can still go and see these little gotipuras, the little boys. They have a whole section just outside of.
Is this some sort of institution, or, you know, is this some sort of institution that recognizes it as a classical dance, that sort of stamps, gives it the stamp?
It's a Sangeet Natak Academy, yeah. And it was about 1968, so then they went up to Delhi, and they had to prove it. You know, in other styles like Mohini Attam and all those different styles, they always had, it was like the exam, are you classical or not? I mean, they accepted Bharatanatyam, they accepted Kathak, they accepted Kathakali, and Kuchipudi wasn't a
Manipuri.
Manipuri, yeah. Mm-hmm. But they didn't accept Kuchipudi. They had to get together, sit down, establish a certain, you know, certain number of steps, certain number of dance items, and the music, because the music also has to be classical.
Yeah.
Mm.
And in some ways it was almost like, you know, Katak, North India, Manipur, you know, it's almost like they picked four, and so it's been a little bit pan-Indian. But, and there isn't the same sort of worry, I don't think, about classicism as there was then, but maybe there is. Does that answer your question?
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
So they started small. They sent one woman who was to Delhi to, it was a part of her college, they had some sort of competition, and she won it. And she said, but I won it, but I am doing a style that's not even classical. So that's how they got in. Everybody said, hey, this is really good.
Yeah.
Now, what's also interesting is that the teachers that do that teach Odissi usually are trained as drummers. That usually gives the best teachers, because that's how they, whereas in Bharatanatyam they play the talam like this. The teachers usually will. So it's musically, it's presented in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual style, musical style done by Odissi really is not a classical style. And it's also, it's so tied up with South India, because this one dancer who was very instrumental in getting it accepted as a classical style Odissi, she had gone first to, her parents sent her down to Kalakshetra to learn how to dance properly, to dance Bharatanatyam. So at that point then she meets her husband, who's also a Riya, but he'd gone to South India to learn to sing. Okay, so now we have Sanjukta Panigrahi and her husband, I don't know if you've heard of them, but anyway, So then they are going around doing Odissi, but really, like, their initial stamping was in Bharatanatyam, but then they made it Ariya. So it's really fun to see how things are all... does anybody have a question? Anybody else have a question?
So when men first started performing...
Oh, Odissi, yeah.
Odissi and Bharatanatyam.
Yeah.
What was the kind of reaction to
reaction?
That?
That you'll find. This I find so interesting. So the most famous of all the hereditary dancers was Bala Saraswati.
Mm.
And she, when I was initially doing my work, I said, should men dance? So I went around and I asked all her, I asked her relatives and everything. And if you want to read my book, you can see. They said it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting, seeing that sweat flowing down. I can't stand it. So Bala's daughter then married an American, okay, had a son. Now, she refused, really. Bala did not, I can always remember, she just did not want to teach her daughter, simply because I don't think she wanted her daughter to suffer the, you know, the people were very cruel, because she, you know, even though they respected her dance. So then her daughter has a son. So who's going to keep the tradition happening? Okay? It's her son. So now, I mean, when you have the Devadasi, the hereditary community, actually teaching their sons. So it's fully accepted. I mean, no one even questions it now. But there was a time of tension when it was very difficult.
Yeah.
To it was like the style of dance called Kathakali, which is done in Kerala. They did not let any women, and now there's a whole French troupe of just women. I mean, you know, there's, so it's all this you know, there's nothing really that can't be done. This is the way it seems that.
Ram Gopal, who was an early male dancer, dealt mostly in the West. So.
Yeah, and he did Bharatanatyam and Kathak as well, yeah. And of course, he wasn't even South Indian, so you know, he was Burmese. And so so you can see that there are these rules, and that's what's really hard when you're trying to write up something, is that there's a rule and then there are all these different...
Do you think that in order for the art form to kind of survive until today, people just had to get over the fact that men were going to dance as well?
I don't know. It's very interesting. Why don't you do your research on that? Yeah. No. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, it has a lot to do with courtesans. I think that is a lot. But then, of course, I think that's really it. Like, it's an accomplishment. So, but then, of course, there are styles that are just done by men. But I think that it was very, very much to do with that. And of course, in those days, that's all you did. You just learned dance or music or something like that. They didn't go to school. And now, of course, in like Jaya Lalita, she was the head of the government in Chennai. She was a professional dancer. That whole all the politicians in Chennai were all dancers. And then, I mean, you can't really make a rule. That's all I'm just saying. But I did find it really interesting how they would just say, oh no, I just didn't want to see it. I don't want to see a man at all. And then in their own family, you know, sort of they adjust.
So you said that, so the women performed, the men taught.
Yeah.
And they didn't perform. But then how, like, they would just learn in a private space, and that would be the end, you know, if they
but
did
the
that
men?
Day in, day out, yeah, but they didn't perform. So what kind of form did their dancing take?
Well, it would just seemed almost by looking at it, they would sort of say, put your hand here, put your hand here.
But they learned, they presumably must have spent their childhood
learning.
They
would sit beside their dad and watch.
But they wouldn't actually dance?
No. And
they
wouldn't even
practice or anything?
No, they would not practice. I found that, and they they could be drummers or singers too, you know, or notuvenos, people conducting it. And so most of them, they can't dance a whole, like a larifu or anything like that. I remember my teacher used to move his fingers like this. Just do this.
So
never get off his bottom. Just pushing.
There'd be no actual physical correction of the dancer.
Well, yeah, they would stand up something and push you, or they just.
But how would they like? How would that? Where would that intuition come from? Like, what is right and what is wrong?
Just from looking at it. That's all. It always amazed me too. No, it really did. Yeah.
And because I feel like when I teach now, I have to physically show.
Dancer. For sure. Oh yeah.
And
that was the thing about Odissi. You see, those men were dancers.
Yeah.
So they would show us.
Yeah.
They would touch us.
Yeah.
And it was allowed. They would touch you and
yeah,
they'd push your hip out and they'd do this and that.
Yeah.
Whereas in Bharatanatyam, they didn't really touch you as much. It was mainly just a stick pointing like that. No, it's true. It is good to have that way. And of course, but don't forget that, I mean, these were like traditional people that were used to.
I think to some extent, the like not touching things still exists. Like,
yeah.
Like, obviously, we're in like very liberal time, but like in my like dancing life, obviously my teacher comes and like, you know, put your elbow up, like, you know,
keep this straight.
But there's still not that much
that
like
much
physical contact. If you learn like Western dance or
there's a lot more kind of
there's that little bit of kind of distance.
But the Odyssey teachers really grab you by the hips, pushing, you know, I mean, there was never, that was just the way they did it. And I think it's because they were taught like that as little boys, you know, and they're so malleable, those little kids, aren't they? You just push them around. And I tell you, our dance, they would dress us. They would put the sari on and everything. They would put our makeup on, everything, the hair. Because they had been dancers. And so they knew how to do that, whereas I don't know of any other tradition that would, you'd come and you'd have your sari and you'd hand it to them and you have some sort of, you know, pajamas or something, but that's it. Hair, the works.
But coming back
they
to your
everything.
Point about how, I know I thought maybe we've had really different experiences in learning dance because your Guruji is a male teacher and you're a female student, whereas my teachers have been female teachers and I'm a male student, so I think they're really comfortable with touching me and making me
but
do
see
things.
The times are so different.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we should adjourn if anybody because some people have to go. But I just want to say thank you. It was really fun because now what I'm going is I'm on, and the reason why I was so grateful to give this talk is I'm off to Orissa. So it makes you sort of rethink a lot of these things about what is happening and visiting some of the different places and seeing how it's. You know, how it's changing, and I was actually the guest of the Orissan government, and so we went around and we did all these wonderful photographs and everything at Kunar. Of course, you can't do it now because they've got all these protective things around
barricades.
There. Barricades, and
they're basically saying no Odyssey form ever, you know, sort of continued traditionally. They just made it all up, and because this is like I did Odyssey.
Oh, you did?
This
oh,
is
yeah.
something completely different than what I've all been taught and heard so far.
Ah, so what is your name?
Guzin.
Guzin,
you know, like, so you're saying, like, whatever was in the Shastras and etc. or in the temples, like, never survived.
Oh, well, what I'll do is I'll tell
outside
you.
Outside the temple, some Odyssey woman dancing didn't survive at all.
Well, first of all, we don't really know.
Yeah, so
but secondly, I'll just tell you what I saw. And what was there were a few women that knew some little bits of the Gita Govinda, and they would sing in the temple, in the temple of Puri. And then there were these men, they were young boys, and they would go around and perform, you know, and they would often be the gopis and things like that. So this is what came to us from now. We don't know what happened before, but there was a great attempt to romanticize what was actually going on. And actually, one of the dancers applied to become the temple dancer in the temple. Now, what that would have meant is that the Raja of Puri can now sleep with you because that's his right, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, she didn't get in, but you know. So there are all these other things. But I can honestly say that. I found it so fascinating the way Odyssey was created, because the intuition of the and the way they did it so systematically, like there's a even almost more than Bharatanatyam, there's the steps and the small combinations of the steps and then they're more I don't think that people learn that now though. I think they just learn items. But like when I did it, you did the steps and then you did combinations of the steps and then bigger combinations of the steps, and then you actually did the items. And as you say, there was only an 8-minute repertoire. That was before I did it. And then it got bigger. And during my time, you can see all these palladis being created and all this. And I mean, it's just a very, very creative form.
But yeah. I think another thing is that increasingly people want to emphasize the association with religion and the temple. I mean, there's been, it moved to the stage, and now it's moving back towards the temple. And as part of that, the people involved with the Rissi dance want to emphasize whatever little connections they can find to the Puri temple, which was the only place where it may have been going on. But if you read the early investigators, like, what's her name?
Margolin. Read Frederick Margolin.
I mean,
you know,
it
like the Buddhist monasteries in Orissa once upon a time for big patrons, for example, you know, like, I mean, historically
Once upon a time,
you know,
there was dancing everywhere,
yeah,
but.
Yeah, yeah.
But
right, so it's just never survived.
As far as the actual transmission to the present, it seems to have been largely through the Gotipua tradition,
mm-hmm.
because the people who put together the original style, those teachers you saw, were all previously Gotipuas.
Mm-hmm.
But they
mm-hmm.
no doubt took from wherever they could. But more recently, people have tended to focus on the connection to the Maharis and the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps people found other things.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there wasn't the same division between the religious and secular anyway, so no one really saw any need to sort of draw a line between it. But I think that the most interesting thing is the creative insight that these men had as to how to, and to go and approach, you know, the Brahmin community in Chennai is pretty tough. And they wanted to get in there and just show that, you know, we can create something and it can be as good. But what is also interesting is Odissi cannot survive in Chennai. It was taught there for a while. Because you see, you have to do musicians and all that. The most interesting place for any kind of Indian dance is Delhi. First of all, patronage is there. That is really where Odissi was invented, was in Delhi. Because all the dance teachers were sort of... Oh yeah, it was Jayantika, that group, was in Orissa. But then all the dance teachers, they wanted to come to Delhi. And who did they want? Pre-trained Bharatanatyam dancers like myself and everything like that. Because we, you know, and so therefore we could learn it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had the shape, we had all the... And so this is really how it started off,
mm-hmm.
was with the... And for a while, there were no Odissi teachers in Orissa, because they'd all come to Delhi. And then they cut off their funding or something and forced them to go back. You know, there's always that struggle and then, you know, and it depends how good a musician the teacher was. Because Kailu Chandra was an excellent drummer. That's why he really created the repertoire, because he could really control the music. So when we went and did it, I mean, we had just incredible musicians. I can't believe it, because nobody else was doing it. You know, and then they needed money and they needed the exposure, and so that would gradually. The most traditional piece is Dasavatar, the 10 incarnations of Vishnu. That is the one that's come from the Gaudiya tradition, and has. But that is really the most original of all of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, nothing can stand still, can it? But it's going to be fun to see who's all doing it now. Every time I go back, I just. And the stories they do, and what's really growing. So I want to thank all of you for coming, and I'm sorry about this, but it did work out in the
end.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Yeah, we have to say thank you, Akiko.
Thank
she
you very
ran
much,
down
Akiko, for producing the vital wire.
She had to run home and get it. Akiko's a scientist, by the way. who has helped with my shows, eh, Akiko? Yeah. So maybe we're going to see you?
Yeah, I'm going down the corridor.
Okay, good, Yelty. So go out there and do that research, though, because you might find something that I don't. Have you been reading?
It's just different perspectives, really.
Well, read Frederic Margolin's, I think, and she'll.
Yeah,
she'll
that's
yeah. Have all of you read Frederic?
Pardon?
You've read Frederic Margolin?
No.
Oh.
No, but I love the book because it's a bit old.
So I should get your emails.
But
so then we can. Do you want to give me your emails?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And what are you all studying? You're studying.
By the coincidence, I just got this book. You know.
Given to the goddess.
Yeah. It's a new one. I just today.
Oh,
I got this year.
Well, you got it at Blackwell. Oh,
no,
this
no,
is
no.
This is about the ones from Andhra, though.
Yeah,
these
yeah.
These are the
yeah.
Yeah.
Got, it's,
yeah.
Did you approach me?
No, it's Karnataka.
Karnataka, that's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
The Yelama and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
You're
cooking
for
it. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for coming. Yeah, so we'll be here another time. Because we're going tomorrow. Oh, and thank you. It was a great just having your effulgence here.
Very good dance.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so we'll see you for sure. Yeah, thanks a lot, Andrew, for coming. Okay.
Maybe
so, so are you studying?
No,
I
mean,
yeah, at Blackwell, yeah. Oh, but you're going to take all my stuff here. He's going to go out to have a tutorial with Akiko. Hey, Akiko.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's Tony and you are going to go and see each other.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and thank you, Akiko, for bringing the.
This is fantastic. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, you liked it? Oh,
really
good. She's from, we're all from, we're living in Canada. She attends the shows.
Yeah,
but she's
yeah,
really
sure.
A scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you know a lot about the dance now, eh?
So how long are you here for?
I'm going tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, give your right hand there. That was wonderful. Yeah, so you're studying here? Or
yeah, I am.
Yeah, I'll
so
see you there.
You want me to take
No, it's okay. Oh, do I have my wallet? Yeah, I think.
Do you have a name card, like a business card?
Oh,
or
yeah, I'll write down the thing. No, I don't,
oh
but
yeah,
I'll write
please.
Down my email.
Yeah.
Oh, God,
yeah.
Did I end up with my wallet?
I can,
I
if you tell me, I can write it on my phone.
Oh, where's Tony? Oh, there it is. Okay. Here we go. Have you got a piece of paper? Oh, you want it there. Gaston. Yeah. Good, good. Okay. And you're studying what? You're studying?
I'm doing Tibetan studies. Tibetan Buddhist.
Oh, wonderful.
But, yeah.
I bet you've done Odyssey.
Yeah, I live in India, so my Guruji is the Puri family, if you know.
Who is your Guruji? Go ahead, because I'll have to meet him.
Well, he has two sons, Nirod and Soros, and they teach basically in Rajasthan in Orissa, and they come to Himachal, where I live right now, so, you know. I was living in South, that's, you know, where I learned from them for the first time. Then when I moved to Himachal, for some reason, through some dance connection they had in Rajasthan, they started to come every year
for a
month or two, so I could continue. So, you know.
You've written your email down here or not?
Yeah, I did.
You're there. Okay,
yeah.
Now I've got yours,
but
you're going
to
take mine.
Yeah, if
yeah,
you can
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
G-A-S.
Here, I'll just write it down here.
Okay,
so then
please,
we'll
that would be much easier.
Gaston at 3web dot com. Now, if you want to see what I do, look on the Cultural Horizons. That's our, but CA. culturalhorizons.ca, not the other one, because it's a different one there. That's my website right there. But CA, it must be. If it's something else, then it's somebody else. My stage name is Anjali, but so many people have that their name Anjali, and then there's a, that you don't even want to. Yeah, but you can see, you know, the different things that we do.
Great,
but
thank you so much.
Oh, well, listen, it was wonderful you came, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very sort of personal before, because I don't know many people were doing it. But, yeah, that was what was interesting. And also the excitement of the creation. But I don't know, I think the dance is alive and well, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And what's good is it means, I hope we got all our stuff, it means that, you know, the teachers are going to earn money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. No, I know Pushkala well, so she
knows
me.
You
don't
know,
okay.
You know Christina too? Ileana?
Christina. Oh, Ileana, I know Ileana,
yeah.
So that's from staying in. Now, Christina is which one? She's.
Ileana, she got
oh,
the
I know
Ileana. Padma Shri.
Oh, yeah,
so
all those ladies do.
Yeah.
And who's Christina? Christina is.
Oh, that's his. That's her sister, actually. That's how I know Ileana. No, that's how I know their sisters. I know
Christina.
Her sister. Huh?
Ileana's actual sister.
Yeah.
Real sister.
Yeah.
I didn't know she had a real sister. I thought she had
a
real
brother. Like a sister-in-law, maybe. But, you know, like they call each other.
Well, listen, it was such an honor that you came. So you got the
we all
know.
Yeah.
Because
we'll
explore this, your idea. Just because I say it doesn't mean you say it's true, right?
Well, no, it's just, you know, like, they were talking about having all these other female, let's say, truth dancers, like, you know,
yeah.
But they knew some forms of temple dancing as well, because the secular and the profane were not
sure.
So separate. So those women was like, you know, dancing the truth, well, whatever,
yeah.
But they also knew the religious forms.
Sure, exactly.
So they were, you know,